Good morning, everyone. Can you hear me okay? All right, good morning. So as you can see here, I worked for a textbook publisher. It's not relevant to this. It was on an undergraduate public health book. But today I'm going to be talking about the results of some BRFSS data that we collected in Florida. So again, I have no relevant financial relationships to disclose, and also I have to say that the opinions expressed here are mine and those of my co-authors and not necessarily reflective of the federal government's position on this. So I worked on this with Elena Andreessen, who's now at Oregon Health Sciences University, Brad Cannell, Allison Hall, and Claudia Tomeo. This was funded through the State Disability and Health Program, funded by the CDC, the NCBDDD there at CDC, and we also would like to thank our wonderful state BRFSS coordinator at the time, Melissa Murray, and Yuji Wang, who is still over the state surveillance program. So we've been talking a little bit already today about defining disability, and I think we're all sort of aware that the definition of disability varies across different data sources. It really depends on why they're being used, and also there's always space and time constraints, of course. So some of the components that we might want to consider are activity and functional types of limitations that Barbara was talking about. On the BRFSS, assistive technology is sort of a component of the definition of disability. We might also think about duration, the impact of any of those activity or functional limitations on quality of life or daily activities, and then also the medical or underlying cause of or condition associated with any activity or functional limitations. So we, again, use the behavioral risk factor surveillance system. There's a surveillance component of the state disability and health programs, and so we've used most of our funding to go towards adding questions to our state's BRFSS. For those of you who aren't familiar with it, it's a population-based telephone survey that's done in all U.S. states and territories among adults, and there are also non-institutionalized adults, so we are missing folks who might live in group homes or other types of congregate care settings. And the website there is cdc.gov/BRFSS for more information and questionnaires and all those sorts of things. So the two standard questions on the BRFSS that we use to identify people with a disability are basically if they say yes to having an activity limitation or to using any special equipment, and the examples are a cane or a special bed or a special telephone. So in Florida, in general, I think we worry about these two questions potentially being too broad. We're not always sure exactly what group they're capturing. We know it's probably a pretty heterogeneous group. There's no duration information in that general one, so it could be people who have very transient or short-term limitations or special equipment use. And we also don't really know how those limitations or the equipment might impact daily activities. So we talked with our partnership in Florida. So as part of these state disability and health programs, we have partnerships. And we asked what they were interested in knowing more about. And access to care was a big issue. And then also getting a little bit more specifics about the type of disability that people were reporting in the state. A lot of our groups, you know, are condition specific. We have the Developmental Disabilities Council. We have folks who do transition for young adults. So they really wanted to know about different kinds of disability. So we decided to add some questions that were used previously on the BRFSS in the health-related quality of life module, and a number of other states have used these. So there's two questions that ask about the type of assistance needed. There's one question about the duration of activity limitation. And then there's one question that has broad categories of potential health conditions that cause those activity limitations. So I've actually put in the full questions here so the first two are, they start the same: because of any impairment or health problem, do you need the help of other persons in handling your routine needs? And so we consider that like instrumental activities of daily living or IADL like disability, and so we sort of classify that as less severe as the second question, which is needing the assistance of other persons with personal care needs. So that would be more like activities of daily living. The duration question is pretty straightforward: how long have your activities been limited? And so respondents could answer in terms of months, years, and then there was also an all or almost all of my life category. And finally, the health condition categories that were possible to answer were physical impairment or disability, learning or intellectual disability, memory or cognitive disability, emotional problems with some examples, a hearing disability, blindness, and speech impairment. So these tables, I apologize, they're a little bit crowded because we had so many different classifications. So on the far right is no disability. So those are the respondents who said no to both having an activity limitation or using special equipment. The column just to the left of that, that's labeled any duration and any type, that's the standard BRFSS definition. So somebody saying yes to either the activity limitation or special equipment use question. And then the three columns to the left of that, actually starting on the far left, we decided to focus just on respondents who reported a disability that had lasted 6 months or longer. And the first column you see is the ADL types of limitations. So this is sort of decreasing severity of disability. So long-term with ADL needs, long-term, the next column over is long-term with IEL needs. And then the column next to that is long-term, but they said no to both of the assistance needs questions. So does that make sense? Any questions about the basic classifications? Okay. So as you can see, and as you might expect, most states have around 20% prevalence of disability based on the two screening questions. So in Florida, and these data are from 2009, so ours was close to 23%. We do have a little bit older population, so it tends to be in that range. And as you can see, the ADL, or the sort of most severe category, was only about 2% of the population, so 235 of our respondents. A little bit higher as you get to just the IADL, almost 5%, and then just over 10% said, you know, had a disability longer than 6 months but no assistance needs. And in terms of the cause of that, this was really largely physical disability. So 82% of the respondents said that their activity limitations were caused by a physical disability. So just keep that in mind as we're looking at the rest of these. This really wasn't representative of all different types of disability. And this is partly because of the way that the BRFSS is administered. So it's a telephone survey and it's non-institutionalized adults. So we're likely to miss some of the people who might have cognitive disabilities or hearing communication disabilities, those sorts of things. And you also might notice that the second most common category, about 8%, was people who said they didn't know or weren't sure. Okay, so here's the really crowded table. But basically the point here is that we did see a fair bit of variation. So if we were looking just at that general, the standard BRFSS definition of disability, which is the second column from the left, you can see that as we average across these groups, because we have such a small number of the folks with more severe types of disabilities, their experiences don't always get carried through to that. So while 16th, for example, the fourth row down, or the fifth row down, we asked, one of the questions that we added about access to care was how often is transportation a problem in getting health care? So 16% of people who had an ADL need for assistance said that they had, that transportation was always or usually a problem. And that's compared to just 8%, so about half of that when you look across all disability using just the standard definition on the BRFSS. And so on that one, you see that even if we use just the broader definition of disability, it's still much higher than folks without disability in the state, but we see that there's even greater need within some other groups. And for lots of, our report, the full report on this is on our website, and we really looked at all of the different health behaviors and demographics and everything you can look at on the BRFSS. And for so many things, we saw this gradient. So as you got to these more severe disability categories, obesity increased, physical activity decreased. So there were very clear trends across a lot of variables. But we did see within some of these access measures that there were some differences by groups. And so it just made us aware that we might need to be thinking differently about the way that we approached these problems and the way we thought about policies and making recommendations to legislators and folks in the state. We also looked at the healthy days measures, so the number of days in the past 30 when physical health was not good, when mental health was not good, and when activities were limited because of poor mental or physical health. So again, this is one of those cases where you can see a pretty clear gradient across the different classifications of disability. So in general, as respondents reported more needs, so ADL assistance versus IDL assistance versus no assistance, you see that there's a sort of a clear trend in all these measures that as the disability is more severe, there tend to be more days of poor health in the last 30. And this was part of the reason that we used the six-month cutoff, because even though these data are cross-sectional, we really wanted to get a better picture of which direction is this error going. Is the disability causing poor health, or is the poor health causing the disability? So even though we can't completely answer that with these data, at least knowing that the respondent had a disability for longer than 6 months and we're asking them about the past 30 days, we're a little bit more confident that the disability or the activity limitation is somewhat responsible for these trends in healthy days. So again, we mostly captured individuals with physical disability here, so we can't say very much about a lot of the other subgroups because we just didn't have enough people in the cells. It could represent truly a higher prevalence in the state, but we also know that there's some limitations, again, associated with the survey itself that may have caused us to miss some people with other types of disability. Again, we see clear differences when we are able to get a little bit more specific about how we're defining disability and the type of disability that people have, which we think can be helpful for public health program planning and policy to try to better target or better make changes that will have the biggest impact for specific groups. So as I mentioned, a number of other states, New Mexico, Iowa, and others, have used these same questions, so I think it's nice to have some data across states to be able to look at differences. We'd also like to be able to collect data over time so we know what changes are looking like in Florida, and also to help us feel a little bit better about some of those estimates, since again, there are some really small groups in there. We also, of course, would like to make sure that the disability questions are maintained on the core of the BRFSS. Many of you probably know that there was some question in the past year about whether those two core questions would stay on, and then I think we'll hear more later today about how we might change what is core on the BRFSS. And then, of course, looking at some of these other measures and looking at, you know, we didn't do any type of validity or testing, cognitive testing of these questions, so those are all important components of getting questions on national health surveys. So here's my contact information. My email address is eboulden, B-O-U-L-D-I-N, at uw.edu. Our FODH website, the Florida Office on Disability and Health website, is fodh.php.ufl.edu. And if you missed any of these, feel free to let me know. I can also give you contact information for any of our co-authors. And again, on our website, there's a publications tab, so you can find the full report if you want to see all of the various tables that we did. So that's all. Thank you.
Thank you.